going to talk about the a few mistakes that you shouldn't be doing while buying and renovating a house in Japan. And the first mistake is obviously, it's supposed to be I don't make these mistakes here. But I made a PR video yesterday for Tobu and I thought it was a little bit fun, but no one is laughing. So let's go to the next slide. We are going to talk about don't do these mistakes buying and renovating a house in Japan. And this is also going to relate to apartments as well. Some of these things are very unique to Japan. Some of them are very universal. Would be applied even in Scandinavia, in the US, all over Europe, maybe in Australia. But some of these things are very specific to Japan. First of all, I think there is one word that's been going around on social media for the past few years, and it is the word akiya. And just because it's an akiya, it doesn't mean that the house is for sale. So if you're looking for a house to buy, even a fixer-upper for personal use and investment property, don't limit yourself to the word akiya. Most of these akiyas are not for sale. I would say, my guess, 99% or 98% of the akiyas probably aren't for sale. But with a little bit of detective work, you might be able to locate the owners. And you're not going to be alone. If you see, I do social media, and one of the most common questions and things people write to me is, oh, I see this akiya in Roppongi, in Shibuya, wherever, in a great location. And if there is an akiya in a great location, like the possibility of a professional developer already like reached out to the owner is very high. And I own one of these akiyas in Nakano. And every month I get a handwritten letter from a company that's, it's pretty cool, I think. They write it like this. 2 pages, and they're pros. You're not a pro. You don't speak Japanese. You don't understand how the real estate market works here. But these are the people that you compete with if you are trying to buy an akiya. You can make it go around if you want to. It's pretty impressive, and I really appreciate the attention to details. But these are the people that you compete with if you're trying to buy an akiya in a great location, especially in Tokyo or Kyoto or any other place. Yes. So who am I? I am a DIY loving Swede. I've been living in Japan for the past 6-7 years, and I moved here because I loved it. And pretty quickly, I realized that there is an untapped opportunity here in not only akiyas, but also apartments. I've been living in New York, I've been living in Paris, London, Sweden. And it's crazy to me that you can buy real estate so cheap just because it is old, like the house is old. So I bought my first unit close to Shibuya after living here for 9 months, DIY renovating it. And then now I turn my hobby into work, basically. And the houses turn into Japandi houses, which is a mix of my childhood in Sweden and Japan. So design wise, this is Wakabayashi Park House, also an akiya. And how I found this house was just through a sign on a gaito, a Japanese, what do you call it? Gaito. Seth. Yeah, street light. So it was a house for sale in close to Sanginjaya, 55 square meters. This is the price. So I phoned the broker up, went to see it, and then we turned it into a Japandi house. So most of these houses, they're not openly for sale. And the reason for this is that the brokers wants to make as much money as possible from you. They want to take the percentage from both sides. And if it's a cheap house, if it's listed on the public market, someone else is going to get the buyer side. So if you really want to get a good deal on an akiya, you need to find the selling broker and let them handle all of it. It's going to be smooth. You might save a lot of money on the purchase costs, but they hold these deals like this. So you got to do your detective work with the local real estate agents. So go local is the key, or my advice to you. This is Akiya Masterclass, a course that me and my friend Nick has been developing for the past 6 months. We finally released it, and I think this is the highest produced course in the industry. We flew in a big camera team from Los Angeles, three cameras, and then we interviewed six professionals, Eric from eHousing, Valerie Vivial, a great Japanese architect, Yamori, the biggest Akiya community in Japan. They have hundreds of members and they're venture-backed capital company. Naomi Saito, which is an Akiya investor who's bought and renovated 20 Akiyas, and then many other guests. And hopefully we can get the trailer up and running now, despite having the beautiful frame around here. It's a PDF, and the quality is not so good. So why don't you catch me later in the hallway and I can explain more about it later. Oh, that's the one. Yes. You might have seen Nick on social media as well. He does a lot of content about Japan and real estate. He's a big-time real estate investor in the US. And now he's operating here in Japan as well. Not only content creation, but he invests in property here too.
About a year ago.
Awesome,
guys. Is where Jeb is here.
When I learned that Japan's shrinking population means that beautiful homes and amazing locations are being sold for less than the sum of my unpaid parking tickets, and foreigners can buy property with all the same rights as local citizens, I called Anton Wallman. Actually, I DM'd him and hoped he would see it.
He has been buying and renovating beautiful traditional homes in Tokyo and elsewhere in Japan and renting them out very successfully.
I bought this house in Tokyo 2 years ago for $70,000. Spent about $70,000 into renovation. Now this generates 100% ROI, translating into $140,000 a year.
Konnichiwa minasan, Anton desu, and welcome to Nakano, close to Shinjuku, central Tokyo, where we are turning this abandoned Japanese house into a Japanese style Airbnb.
Tourism to Japan is exploding. The entire world wants to visit. Of course, it's Japan. And people love staying in these beautiful traditional homes instead of tiny hotel rooms.
We're just waiting for the real estate agent to prepare it for documents, and then we'll sign.
Japan is one of the most exciting real estate opportunities in the world right now, but I see so many people making simple mistakes. It's not just buying a cheap house. It's about adding value and joining the community because it's fun. That's why we've developed the Akiya Masterclass, to teach people how to buy, renovate, and operate real estate in Japan the right way. Things I wish I knew when I started this journey 7 years ago. I want people to love Japan, and I want people to love this experience as much as I've loved it. When foreigners come here and do this the right way, it makes us all look really good. This could be a win for you, and this could be a win for Japan as well.
So that's the trailer. We have only had a soft launch so far. We've been in post-production for 7 months, but this is a result of all the questions that I get on social media, really. I'm not a broker. I'm an investor and I'm a DIY guy. I love adding value into like old houses, and it's so much fun to learn about the craftsmanship and to work together with the local Japanese carpenters and learn about the community and just create beautiful things. And it doesn't have to cost a lot of money. My first unit in Shibuya, I spent about 1.5 million yen on renovation, and it turned out to be a fantastic shooting location. Now my taste has developed, and now, unfortunately, it's more expensive. The wood prices have gone up, and my taste, I used to use a lot of pine and recycled and just the cheapest wood. But in order to develop, I develop my style too over time. So, and you got to try new things over and over, right? As I said, I'm not a real estate agent. If you want to buy a house, you can ask Ziv, you can ask Emil. But I'm boots on the ground. Like I've learned like you're here to learn, really. These are numbers from taken from my book, but taken from Nikkei Shimbun and also the government of Japan. And as you see, the amount of Akiyas and abandoned vacant homes are growing rapidly. And it has to do with the scrap and build culture, but also, as you all know, the declining population in Japan. And the projection is 21.66 million vacant homes by 2033, which is pretty staggering, the amount of numbers. Twice, you could hand two houses out to each person from my country, Sweden. We're only 10 million in population. And here you see the declining graph that you've probably seen in Japanese or international news over and over as well. But the reason why these houses are vacant and abandoned, these are a big survey conducted by, I think it was the government? Anyway, so most people who has an Akiya, they're using it as storage. And what I find really interesting is that I've been on Japanese media quite a lot recently. And we talk a lot about the Akiya problem and how to utilize these vacant homes. And it's very funny. I could speak to a Japanese person for about 20 minutes. And then all of a sudden, they're like, wait, my childhood home, it's also vacant. What, like, it doesn't click to them that what I'm doing, like, they could do too. They already sit on the house. They could sell it. They could keep using it as a storage. But it's such a wide problem in Japan, and no one really wants to talk about it. And foreign buyer demand is rising. Look at this. Big applause. Thank you for coming here. Woo! This is the fourth time I'm coming here. Thank you, Ziv, for inviting. And I feel like we're growing. There are a lot of people interested in Japanese real estate and renovation and minpaku and akiyas as well. And foreign buyer rising, and that a lot. So the opportunity is here to do something good and like solve the problem with the amount of akiyas, and also like the amount of foreigners in Japan, like living here, but also tourism is rising. And I think that's like 1 + 1 = 2, right? The amount of akiyas is rising, but also the amount of foreigners here is rising. And to me, my akiya journey has been great because I felt a sense of belonging in Japan. By buying into the community, I started caring more about the area because that's a place where I live. That's a place that I wanted to live. And you get a sense of belonging, I think. I don't know if it's about like owning something or if it's about like the neighbors believe that you're going to be there for a long time and they invest money and time and effort into getting to know you because they know that you're going to be there for a long time. So what are the difficulties as a foreigner buying and renovating houses in Japan? There's obviously a language barrier and there is no clear guidance or strategy. Scrap and build in Japan. There's a good piece of land. People will tear the house down and build something brand new. You also have unrealistic renovation expectations. Blanca, you have anything to add here? You want it all Gucci, but you only want to pay Uniqlo, right? Yes. So this is something that I see a lot as well. And renovating with a contractor beautifully to a high standard, it will cost money. But the more time and the more you care, the less money is going to cost you. The more time you can spend in the house, because all these small details, and if you work 7 days a week, like you won't be able to spend that amount of time. But if you can add some extra time into the house and think about these things, it will save you a lot of money. Just sourcing material alone. Like if you source the material and then let the contractors install it for you, that alone, I think, would probably cost half of what you were quoted in the beginning. So an abundance of vacant homes, but the carpenters and the skilled labor is scarce. So it's actually very easy to buy a house, especially in the countryside. But finding labor, finding someone who can help you get to the goal with the renovation, that is really the hurdle. Carpenters, roofers, electricians in decline. Labor shortage in Japan is real. And in the countryside, there's a lot of Vietnamese, Sri Lankans, Indians, a lot of immigration in the construction, and Nepalese people as well, in the construction, also in newly built. And I think this is, I think that they're going to ease up on the visa rules. But I'm not a visa lawyer, so ask someone else about this. But I see a trend in this, like the labor. Like there, it's impossible to find good and reliable labor. Believing cheap is good. I think social media is a good is putting fire to the what do you call it? Putting fuel in the fire to this. Like there's a lot of cheap houses in Japan, but do you want to live in I don't know, Aomori? If you want to, go ahead. Like you're be my guest. But cheap isn't always good. To me, or we can change the. Why should you buy a house in Japan? Any ideas? Lifestyle, good one. Anything else? Security, anything else? Renting to foreigners, investment. Anything else? Food is a good one too. Buy this particular house because you like the area. If you like Japan, that's one thing. So I would like to start to, if I were you, I would narrow the search down bit by bit. Do you want to live in Chiba? Do you want to live in Aomori? Do you want to live in Hokkaido? Do you want to live in Tokyo? Tokyo is massive. Where in Tokyo do you want to live? So you have to start narrowing down the area, I think. And if you work, Tracy said that as well. If you work with the area, you feel the area. If you go to a local, I don't know, yakitori place, they're going to tell you about the vacant houses in the area. They've been there for 30, 40, 50 years. They might know an owner who sells this akiya to you. And what's open on the market is just a tiny, tiny fraction of what's actually for sale. You will find the best deals by talking to the community, get to know the community, get to know the local yakitori guy who's been running his yakitori place for 40 years. That's how you find good deals. And most of these houses are not on the market because the owner doesn't see any value. He or she can't see that someone would like to buy this house. So I think that's where the big opportunity is. And then you've already started like activating the community. And if nothing shows up, maybe that's the wrong community. Maybe they don't want you there. But if it's the right community, they will show you a house. I'm telling you. If it's in Ginza, probably not. But if you go away, like a little bit further away, I'm sure, like if you approach it with the community aspect and the area in mind, and if you do it the right way, you will be very successful, I think. I also have some statistics here about Japan doesn't work the same way as anywhere else in the world. And we had the bubble economy here in the 80s, 90s, right? These are land prices, 24, 25. And as you can see, the price, everything that's yellow is like an increase in price. You see here, Hakuba is insane. I'm sorry, I didn't bring in Hokkaido on this map. But this is just in 1 year. So real estate prices and land prices are going up. This is from 24 to 25. This is from 2015 to 2025. So it's rising pretty rapidly. And no one is really talking about this, I feel. People are like, okay, real estate in Japan is depreciating, but it's not right. And then 2005 to 2025, some places, even like tower mansions and brand new condominiums can sell for sometimes 2, 3, 4, 5 times the price. And then 1990, it's been declining since 1990. So there was everything. That's the result of the bubble. But you probably already know about all of this. Not doing research on ownership. Many actors are not ready to sell. And my Chiba farmhouse, It took about a year. I was approached by a broker who said that I could buy this house. And then the final paperwork took about a year because there was one sibling who lived in Gunma somewhere who didn't want to sign the final paper. And this company, they got the house and they also got money from the owners because they never believed that they were going to sell it. So they got the house, they got money, and then I paid money to get the house because I loved it. I drove inside those beautiful gates and I saw a lot of potential with this place. So convenience and make it easy for the seller, but it takes a lot of time sometimes to find all the owners, to find all the siblings. Another mistake I see a lot of people do when it comes to renovation is starting demolition without a plan. And this, it works sometimes. If it's an investment unit, maybe, but I would like to spend more time into the house and like spend time there and think about what's possible with that particular space. Where does the sunlight hit and how does everything work well together? It's easy to do in a rendering, but you're going to live in it or you're going to spend time in it. And if you don't spend time in it, if you spend time in it, it will become a nice house. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, this is Sangenja house before and after pictures. Yeah, we can go to the next one. Yeah, and we demolished and had a lot of fun. This took us about 1 year turning it into a beautiful Japandi house. Hiring the wrong workers as well, making it easy, but also, as we talked about, labor is scarce. Like there's a labor shortage and finding the right people who vibe with you, who understands you and who understands your vision. Because the normal renovation here is just, okay, cushion flooring, wallpaper, new Lyxeo kitchen and done. If you're happy with that, you could probably find a lot of nice companies, but I would like to challenge that and create more beautiful spaces. Yeah, I worked on a house last year with my main team was busy. So I worked with a new contractor I've never worked with before. Okay. And yeah, it was a headache. 2 months. I was so nervous. Were they going to finish the job? Are we going to finish on time? Are we going to be over budget or not? And there were no clearance, no communication, no nothing. And I slept so bad. I was so stressed. And then when the job was done, I slept so good. And it like taking all the stress away, work with people you trust and who shares your vision. Good contractors are busy. Respect Blanca's time. That's what I'm trying to say. No communication with the community. I think this is probably the most important one. We had a community event 2 weeks ago. Emil came for some champagne and some UFO catching with an excavator. And all my neighbors came. Kinjo Kaicho, my 85-year-old Shimada-san, Sawada-san. Everybody came. We had tacos. It was great. And this I bought into this community about 5 years ago. And then 3 years ago, I could buy the second neighboring house. And then I just got the third house right next to the second one. And all this was possible because I was already approved in the community. And yeah, community really is everything. You're a foreigner. You're in Japan. This is Japanese land. If you are accepted, opportunities will arise around you. Yes, that's the... Yeah, you can't DIY gas, electricity and plumbing. Don't do that. And also structural parts of the house. I wouldn't touch that either. I don't know if Emil or Blanca...
Blanca's presentation is about that, yeah.
Okay, so we can skip all of that. I really don't understand why they want you to build a new roof on top of the existing roof and adding weight to the house without a kakuni shinsei. But Blanca, I'll leave that to you. Make it easy for the seller and contractor, contribute to the community and area, and opportunities will arise. If you spend time and if you invest in that community, like there will be so much opportunities around you. But what is most important? what is most important.
Yes.
Boom. Are we having fun? Yes. I look for location, sunlight, uniqueness, and how I feel about the place. There could be a great deal on the market, but you got to spend a lot of time in that house and in that area. And if you don't feel good about it, like, I don't think it's worth it. You got to feel good about the place. You got to be able to have a vision about it. Are you going to be able to make this house unique in your way? And sunlight and location are things you can't really change with a house. So those two things are really important. Then the other two is about how you feel, really. I like the older, the better. The more character, the better. And the more opportunities, because no one else wants to touch them. Yeah, and the design I have in mind when I create my Japandi houses, other than the things that I just mentioned, natural materials, wood, stone, and plaster immediately makes it more expensive, because the cheapest way is just to put putty and then wallpaper on top of it. And just minimal. Too many things just makes it cluttered, and I don't like it. So sometimes it's better to just stay away from some things and just white walls, wooden floors, a lot of sunlight. Sunlight alone is such a good mood. And also a lot of traditional Japanese details. Tatami, shoji, fusuma, I love it. My guests love it. And without that history of the house, I think anyone can create it. It's a brand new house. You could just render it and put a template on it, and then you can mass produce a million of these houses. But a house with history and attention to these small details, I think it's something I always have in mind when building Japandi houses. A house with a story, warm and inviting space, sunlight, recycled materials, and also big kitchens. Something I love to play around with. Any final thoughts or questions? Give it all to me. Yes.
Yeah, we'll run the mics. Hang on. Give us a second. Meanwhile, from the stream, they're asking, do you always earthquake retrofit houses when you purchase them?
Yes, I do. And I've had both architects, structural engineers, and but in the end, my carpenters are like, work with good people. Work with good people. Yeah. Yes. Hello.
Hi, Anton.
Yeah.
So, I understand that you're very positive about the Akiya space and you see a lot of potential in a lot of Akiyas, but are there some Akiyas, because I'm asking for a friend of mine who's got a really old Akiya, like a lot of my Japanese friends actually have got like their family homes. He's got an Akiya out in Nagano-ken.
Beautiful.
And he thinks it's basic. He doesn't see any value in it. It's over 100 years old. It's got like lots of style. It's like a washiki style. Yeah. So I'm asking, do you see value in all Akiyas, or do you think some Akiyas are just like not worth it? They're just like should be demolished, or do you like, how do you feel about Akiyas that are more rural or harder than like Tokyo? Like Sangenjaya is a very popular area. If it's more rural, do you see potential in them?
First of all, in the really old Akiyas, I really see a lot of potential. I think it's really sad to be tearing down 150 or 200 year old like heritage houses. I think that's one thing. And first of all, I would like to save all of these houses. Like that would from a grand scheme, if you think of the houses in Japan, that's the houses that I would love to save. Second of all, I don't think it's viable to do that, because most of these houses are going to be in very rural areas that are not as developed, because it's been 80 years since the war, and like the rebuild culture and the scrap and build culture has been making its waves there over three or four generations. First of all, I think location. Do they want to spend time there, or do they see potential in the place? If you believe in the place, I think there is a potential for revival.
It's a very beautiful house, but obviously the location maybe is the one thing that we are concerned about. So yeah, the location is everything with real estate, I guess. Yeah.
So another question, would you like to spend 3 days a week for the next year there fixing this place up?
Who, me?
Yeah, or your friend.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, then I don't think it's a good location.
Thank you.
Anton, somebody asking if you did and if it is possible to get a loan for one of these projects.
So, I haven't gotten a loan for a particular house, but I've got loans through my company. And since most of these houses are on the cheaper spectrum, you can take a company loan and then you can purchase from that money. You could also back finance. And you could also, if you have a rebuildable property in a good location, you can also put that in as collateral. And then you can buy Akias that way. And there are also other banks to a little bit higher interest, about 4.5%, you can sometimes buy Akias. And there are like 3 or 4 different banks. Let me get back to that later. But so, there are some banks that are okay with it. As long as you're paying taxes in Japan, you're not a criminal, you're nice to deal with, and you fill in all the paperwork.
But technically, it's not a mortgage. It's all kinds of business loans.
It's an investment loan.
Investment loan.
Yes. Yeah. Or a company loan.
Yeah. Anton, I'm pretty sure you get a lot of questions from all over Japan about Akia. How do you answer if the town hall call you and says, help us with Machiokoshi?
It's never happened before. But
what if we call you from Hokkaido? Remind them now. We have at least, in my list, I have 5 towns. All of
5 towns. Well, invite me over and see what we can do. Yes. Yes. I buy a lot of unrebuildable houses. I renovate anyway, so I love the unrebuildable ones because they're cheap. You got to renovate them, and that's what I love doing. So I buy a lot of unrebuildable houses. And I think being a foreigner in Japan, the unrebuildable houses are the... You compete with for the unrebuildable houses on the same kind of level as a Japanese person with a steady income here, because you cannot get a mortgage on them. So it's a cash purchase. And I guess most of the people in here are cash buyers. But be very careful about them though as well. Like you sometimes can't insure them, and there are many negative aspects to them as well. But I buy a lot of unrebuildable properties. Yes.
I have 2 questions.
Yes.
Can you talk about like a construction horror story? I know you said like 2 months. Like, is there another story that you have that you would like to share? And then also, do you offer consulting?
I haven't really been offering consulting. Like, it takes away a lot of... I need to build my company. All my time has gone into like creating, whether it's content or whether it's spaces. And it, like, the Akia Masterclass will be like the kind of like funnel into that, with like weekly seminars. And that's the idea of it. Because one-on-one consulting, it takes, as much as I would love to help you, there, I really don't have any bandwidth to do it right now. And that's the idea with the Akia Masterclass. But it's been 7 months in post-production now. So finally, we're there. Yes.
Oh, the horror story.
Working with plumbers, working with electricians, and there are sometimes it's easier to work with a big ekometen because they will handle all of it, instead of you finding the electrician, finding the plumber, finding the plasterer, finding everybody one by one. So sometimes it's easier to find a local person, a local ekometen, a construction firm, but do it local. Like, I speak Japanese. Then obviously helps. But if you are in the... Start with the nearest person. Go to the yakitori and ask for a construction company. And they will introduce you to someone. And if you have an introduction from a Japanese local person, the way to get in is so much easier. Yeah.
What's up, Anton?
Shana.
I have a question. You said that it's very hard to find people to help you do the work, and as there's more people getting into Akias, do you think that makes it a problem if you want to get into Akias going forward? There's like a rising demand for Akias, but the amount of work is decreasing? What's your take on that?
I think Japan is going to open up.
Okay.
And with them opening up the borders, I think there's going to be a lot of come a lot of skilled workers to Japan. But it might take, maybe Blanca has another view of this, but I think there's a lot of room for improvement from these companies as well. So I think it's about like how they get into the Japanese society. If they have a good leadership, like it would probably take a few years for good construction workers to learn the Japanese way of doing it. This is very particular. Just throwing away trash here is and the way things are building, like roof, there are no trusses. The way they build everything here is just the other way around. And if maybe you're very skilled in the US or in Nepal or India, but coming here, you got to kind of relearn things tweak things.
Yeah. One more question from the stream and one more from the room, and then we'll have to move on. So from the stream, do you have a rule of thumb for estimating renovation costs?
This is a tricky one. You need to kind of see the house before, but I haven't seen any. It really depends on how much you know and how much you can do on your own. But as like a full gut is easily 10 mil. Easily 10 mil. I think the cheapest one I've gotten away with was my first unit that I bought. That was about 1.5 or 2 million yen, but that was an apartment. An apartment, like you can make it on the cheaper. But that was also 5 years ago, and the construction prices and everything has gone up since. Not only real estate prices, but everything is getting more and more expensive. Even Akia sometimes in good locations.
Hello. So I had a question. I mean, well, multiple questions, but in one. How do you find the right workers and keep the renovation costs low in Tokyo? And are there any license or legal requirements involved? And do you think like renovating an IKEA for Airbnb can work as a part-time business, or does it really require full commitment? And what was the website you used for checking the cost, I mean, the increasing renting costs in Japan as well?
So the increasing land prices are from Nikkei Shimbun. I can give out the link to you very soon.
Mitsui Fudosan has a very good statistics page in English as well.
Workers, I work with people that my local community have introduced me to. So I work with a very talented Japanese carpenter called Katsuki-san. He doesn't speak a word of English, and his attention to details is fantastic. We build these very intricate Japanese joints in our build we're working on right now. It's so much fun too. We've failed a few times, so 2 days of work and then you've got to throw the piece of wood out of the window. So when it comes to permits, not much. I've tried to apply for permits because of these houses are unrebuildable. And for example, the Sangenja house, it was a two-story house when I bought it. But on paper, it was only 36 square meters in one story. So they told me to, okay, we can't really register this house, but register it when it's done. So I finished the renovation, and then the local lantmäteri, I don't know how you say it in English, but they came and remeasured the house and then filed all the documents. The Nakano house doesn't exist on paper. There are like fantastic drawings from the... These are the drawings of this house. You can take it around, that I got when I purchased it. So they have all the drawings and everything is registered. But when you go to Nakanoku, there's no house there. So they build it, but then at the final like registration, they never registered it. And I have no idea why. Maybe Emil knows. Why don't...
It's not in that 45 year. People that it does.
Oh, really?
Sure. Except like Tokyo, most of out of Japan.
I have houses that are built in the 1930s though, and they are registered.
Yeah.
Okay. I learned something too. Thank you very much.
There's also up until about mid 2000s, it was common for them not to do the final inspection. So they get plans and permits all approved. They build it, but then they wouldn't get the City Hall to come and do a final inspection and check off that everything is complete according to the permits. So the Kensa Zumi Shore is what that's required. And that was even up until early 2000s. It just wasn't common for a lot of places to have it. And now when they try to buy those houses, the banks ask, is that documentation even there? Like, no, it's not. So
even the banks doesn't know about this, because I got a loan from the Nakano house, but the banks were on me and they made me go there. And then the bank guy, he had to talk to one of the people from the Kenchiku Bu. I don't know what you call it. The construction things in Nakano. So they had to talk and he was like, there is no house. And the other guy, yes, there is, but it's not registered. Yes, but there is no house. And then they were like discussing for like 10 minutes. And then finally, like the guy from the bank, like he gave me an okay. I understand what you tried to say for like 2 weeks now. So they're like, you're kind of breaking new ground while like touching these old houses.
We're officially on a 45-minute break now. I'm okay to we're okay to continue this. Well, let Tracy know as well if you want. If Anton is okay to continue with the Q&A for a bit, we can carry on. But officially, you've got 45-minute break time now.
Okay. Any other questions, or do we want? Okay.
Permitting process, and second, it's what are you doing?
Wait for me.
Okay.
I'm coming. Here you go.
Can you speak about the permitting process? And then also, what are you doing with these houses? Are you renting them annually or you're doing short-term rentals? Or?
So I do a little bit of mix between what Tracy and Ziv, Emil, is doing. And maybe Blanca as well. So it's just that I'm only doing it for our team in a way. The permitting process is just... like these houses are old. I put in the permit like afterwards. Okay, this is the house. We're renovating it. What should we do later on? And then when it's all done, like you get the guy to come in, and you could always ask. I don't really know.
Two questions for the stream before we go to the next question in the room. Number one, could you say what the company loan that you got is called in Japanese? And is your company registered as a property investment company? Or what is it registered as?
I have a Godo Gaisha. And I have the loan through Shiba Shinkin, which means like the lawn mini bank.
Do you remember the name of the loan? Is it a specific kind of loan that has a Japanese term?
I have too many loans, but one of them is called Setsubi Shikin. And I think that would be the one that I would recommend people to apply for. But get a pro to do this for you. You don't want to deal with this on your own. You really don't. Get your scrivener or get someone who has these contacts to introduce you to someone and then have them do it for you.
What's that loan security?
Guys, when you're asking questions for the room, please wait for the microphone to get to you so that the people in the stream can hear them too.
Sorry. What is that bank loan secured against in the company?
My shihonkin. So I put in money, I create a company, they have a business plan, they believe in the business plan, they give me money.
Okay, just a quick one. We're talking about creating an asset here, or a class of assets. You're buying low, you're improving the asset. How is that looked upon in terms of, you know, then ongoing taxes against the asset value post renovation, given that it's still a 100-year-old house?
Yeah.
How does that look in terms of if you were going to offload that asset?
Very good question. I don't really know, to be honest. It's an old, maybe Emil knows this better.
Okay, yeah, so I'll answer that very quickly. A lot of times they look at the property by age. So it doesn't matter how much you've redone it, it's just too old to really be have any capital value as a property for the bank as collateral. So sometimes when you do these loans for properties that are generally even for a wooden structure, 23 years? I forget. 22 years is the usable life of a wooden asset. So even if it's only 25 years old or 30 years old, it's hard to get finance. The banks won't value it, let alone something that old. It's very different to what we are used to in the West, where you add value to it and then you get it reassessed and you've got extra equity that you can withdraw from. So assume that it's like a 1990 Toyota Corolla. Doesn't matter how nice you redo the interior and repaint it, it doesn't have the same value.
But at the same time, sometimes they don't really check the value of the house if you want to put that up as a collateral for something else.
Largely look at the land value in that case. So definitely if you own the land, they will assess that. But for old properties, I even have some investors, they will buy like, you know, an apartment building, like a 30-year-old apartment building. If they do get financing on the property, it's assessed largely as the land value, not the, they won't calculate on the building for collateral from the bank. Again, that's for Tokyo and the central areas that I'm familiar with.
A quick one from the stream while we're passing the mic. What happens when the parts of the property are not declared or not registered? Does somebody have to pay for that, buyer, seller? Is there a penalty? It also reduces property tax. So when and if do they come in and reassess? How does that work?
So you have to call them in and re-register the property. I've done it twice. And I was able to get the houses very cheap because there are parts of the house that are not registered. So that's a bargain point on your side. So make it easy for the seller. Maybe you get a few million yen off. And then in the end, I think it cost me 150,000 yen to re-register the house. So it's not very expensive. It might differ. I'm not a pro in that. I've only done it twice. So. But it was very smooth, very convenient. They came in and they gave you drawings and then they filed it to the municipality. This is how the house looks. And then I showed that, okay, I didn't actually do this. These tatami rooms are 60 years old. And then they just nodded and noted. And then a month later, I had everything done.
In our cases, when our customers buy these older houses, it's always up for debate or negotiation. Sometimes the seller will say, we're going to register it as part of the ownership transfer. Sometimes they're going to say it's going to be handed over as is. You can debate it with them if you want, or you can do the same thing when you sell. You either register or you don't.
Just an extension of that question, because I understand now, as you noted, from April 1st, obviously all these regulations have changed, and without that Kakunin Zimisho,
yes,
you can't actually conduct renovations until you have that. So I'm just kind of curious as whether that sort of impacted you and how you're looking at some of your Akia going forward and what the impact could potentially be for that whole Akia business. Second question is just on local subsidies. I'm just kind of curious whether you're actually using any local subsidies. Of course, a lot of that kicks in from April 1st also.
So local subsidies, I've touched it, but then I ran the other way. I like conducting and doing renovation. There's like so much going on, and then adding an extra layer of Japanese paperwork. Like you could get like maybe a few thousand dollars. Like some people get a lot of money, but just the time and money and energy spent on something like that. Maybe you can hire a company to do it, but maybe that will stall your renovation for 4, 5, 6 months. So there's always a balance, I think. If you have a lot of time and if you want to learn how to do it, like you could probably put a template on it and do it over and over again if you're about to renovate a lot of houses, but I've never touched it. 8 months.
Folks, let's give Anton a break because he's continuing.